This is Night Call. Broadcast live with host Russ Gibb and tonight's guest, editor James Wall. Tonight's subject, why do we like James Bond? You participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Now here's Night Call host, Russ Gibb.
Hello, Night People. This is Gibb. We continue our look at love this week on Night Call, and standing by in Park Ridge, Illinois, is Mr. James M. Wall, editor of Christian Advocate and a movie critic. If you would like to ask a question about tonight's topic, why do we like James Bond, or make a comment on the James Bond movies, give us a call here at our national Night Call number. The number to call us at is area code 313-846-6601. The operators are on duty, and the lines are now open. Now remember, you may call from anywhere collect. Please make the call station to station. The number, area code 313-846-6601. And we'd like to hear from you. Mr. Wall, why do we like the James Bond movies?
Russ, I think there are at least two major reasons, I would say, or three. One is these are well-made films. They're enjoyable films. They're well put together. But secondly, there is in these films a kind of a fascination with the electronic age in which we live, and this appeals to all of us because we're both fascinated by electronics and, I think, frightened by them. But the thing that concerns me the most is the third area, which I think is much more destructive and rather dangerous in our lives today. And that is that the Bond films have about them a destructiveness and an appeal to death and hatred and all of the negative aspects in life, as opposed to the love and life aspects of life.
Well, now, doesn't the movie sort of show James as a great lover? Wouldn't this be love?
Well, they show him this way, yes, but seems to me that these films give a surface presentation of James Bond as a great masculine figure, a great conqueror of women, the master plan of the seduction. But what's underlying the theme of the film that I have found as I have seen these three, and as the fourth one is coming up, is that here is a man who gives us the impression of being a lover, but at the same time, he permits us as film viewers to experience a great deal of sadism and of cruelty and of murder, so that what appears to be hyper-masculinity is actually, it seems to me, a real strong anti-masculine behavior.
Now, what are you saying? That people that like to punish other people are really homosexuals? Is this what you're saying?
No, I'm not talking about punishment so much here as I am just the fact that in our culture there seems to be sort of a... Well, of course, in every man, let me put it this way, Russ, in every man, every woman, for that matter, I'm talking about a man right now, but every man, there is this pull in both directions, toward life and toward death, toward love and toward hate. And there is, in the Bond film, that which appeals to the thing in us that pulls toward death, toward hatred. And that which is attracted to cruelty and punishment of others, yes, the word would be punishment. And in this sense, we've got an anti-heterosexual experience. That is, a non-participation in the genuine sense of love. And you use the term homosexual, and that's a scientific term, which is a little complicated. I'd rather not use it. I'd rather simply say an anti-heterosexual motif that I find in these.
Well, now, what do you mean by heterosexual?
Well, the normal commitment of a male to a female with the desire to express love and the desire to deal with tenderness and creativity and all that this involves, the positive reaching out to another human being that we find in the heterosexual experience.
But, Jim, aren't the Bond films basically spoofs? I mean, aren't they takeoffs on such matters?
Yeah, I would say this. I don't for a minute want to deny the fact that we're not watching and I suppose an attempted satire, but it's more of a spoof. But even more, do we need to be aware of what we are seeing when we're seeing a spoof? We need to be aware of the fact that we are invited in this particular film, and I'm seeing this now as a Christian.
Well, now, why do we enjoy this type of entertainment?
Well, all of us have this in us. All of us have this tendency toward, let's say, this negative aspect in our personality. And I'm not denying that this is a part of life that we ought to vicariously, occasionally participate in. What bothers me about James Bond, though, is that we don't always realize it. As you mentioned in your earlier question, we've got a masculine on the surface figure. And we think we're enjoying it because of the masculine qualities in the film. But what we're really enjoying, I submit, is this anti-heterosexual experience.
Well, now, give me some examples of this type of anti-heterosexual feelings that are to you, at least, in the movies.
Yeah, the Goldfinger film is perhaps the best known of the three that have appeared thus far, and the one that had the highest budget. The first two films, Dr. No and From Russia with Love, were made on a much lower budget and did not have anywhere near, though there were elements of this, did not have near this much cruelty, sadism in it. But now, if you go back in your mind over Goldfinger, and I hope you've seen it, we have the film opens when Bond goes in to kiss a girl in a tub. And he's embracing this girl, and in her eyes, he sees a culprit coming up to hit him on the back of the head, something the girl has obviously set up. And he swirls the girl around so that she receives a blow on her head. And then in the fight that ensues, the man who does this attacks the girl. Bond throws him in the tub, throws in the electric heater in the tub with him, and he's electrocuted. So
now,
the very beginning of the film, the point I make, the very beginning of the film is that you have an experience of love, briefly mentioned, briefly dealt with, and then a brutality, the girl is hit on the head, and then death, all in one package, you see.
And you're saying that these two things, death and love, are not compatible?
I'm not saying they're not compatible. I'm saying that, of course they aren't compatible. What I'm saying is that in this particular scene, the motif is that of death and suffering. The initial love is so briefly dealt with as to not be a strong motif in the scene. These are the come-on parts of the scene, but the real power in the scene is the suffering and ultimately the death. And then, of course, there are other scenes in this film where women die. You know, one girl is painted all over in gold, suffocated to death.
Yes, what's the significance of that?
If you remember, you could sort of time this with a stopwatch. We go into that scene and we see a Bond being the great lover, and he's already finished his encounter with this particular girl, so whatever kind of a lover he is, we don't know much about it. This is all we know about him, just a brief look at this, and then he goes into the kitchen. He comes back after being knocked out and out for a while, comes back, and the girl is dead, having been painted over in solid gold. Now, the significance of this, I think, is that the audience is invited to participate in the agonizing, exquisite feeling of seeing a blonde die, suffocate, and this camera stays a long time on this nude form of this blonde.
Whenever a camera stays on one person for a long time, this is saying this is what the author wants you to understand,
Yeah.
Or the director?
The total cinematic experience that we're getting, that we are receiving here, is governed by the camera. James Bond himself is just an object in the film that the director is using. And the director is saying, this is what I think you should experience right now. This is what we do experience. There are other things in the film where a girl gets hit in the head with a hat, a steel hat, and she's killed. Things of this sort that continually recur what give me this idea of the underlying theme of death and destruction.
Well, now, in the movie, doesn't he have an affair with Pussy Galore?
Yeah.
Well, now, wouldn't this say that he is a very normal type man?
Yeah, and it would normally, except that I think it's pretty clear in the film that Pussy Galore is a lesbian and is obviously not interested in men. This is obvious in the book, by the way. I mean, Fleming says so in the book, but the film doesn't go quite this far and give the word. They simply give strong implications that she is. She wears the regalia traditionally attributed to lesbians.
Our guest tonight, Mr. James M. Wall. Our topic, Why Do We Like James Bond? You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Well, I can't this Sunday. I'm playing golf, and the following Sunday I promise to take the kids to the beach.
Uh-huh.
Man's got to spend some time with his kids, you know.
Yeah, sure.
Besides, we seem to get along just fine without church. You know, it's up to the individual. Gee, look at the time. I got to run. But anyhow, we'll trot along to church one of these days.
Uh-huh. Well, how about 2 weeks from Sunday?
Oh, I never planned that far ahead. 2 weeks, the whole world could blow up by then.
That's right.
Where you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him? It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
The preceding was presented by the United Presbyterian Church. This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
Our guest tonight, Mr. James M. Wall. He's the editor of The Christian Advocate and a gentleman who is a noted movie critic. Our topic, why do we like James Bond? And if you'd like to call us here and comment on the James Bond movies, give us a buzz at Night Call. That's area code 313-846-6601. Now, if you wish, you may dial us direct. And you may also make that call collect. Our Night Call number, 313-846-6601. Now, our lines are open, and we'd like to hear from you. What do you think about this idea? Is James Bond really a... I think we've said more or less, Mr. Wall, that he's a latent homosexual, haven't we?
Rather loaded term. I'd rather call him an anti-heterosexual figure. I'd rather call the film an anti-heterosexual film.
All right, then we'll call it that.
Attacking Bond is like attacking the front tires of an automobile. The real engine of this car is the director's concern, you know.
Well, we're talking about Pussy Galore in here, and that the fact that in the book she's definitely tagged as a lesbian, yet in the movie, because of what reason, I really don't know.
Well, I suppose sensitivity to public audience reaction or anything else. I mean, you movies come under rather strenuous examination from the Motion Picture Producers Association, film code.
Well, the fact that someone's a lesbian, but it's all right to have people murdered left and right on the movie screen.
Yeah.
I wonder about our code sometimes.
Yeah.
Well, tell me this now. Can you give me any other examples of where we have this gal enjoying torturing men, as it were, and I assume that her affair with James Bond was, in a sense, a game as far as she was playing.
Yes, I think the thing that I noticed most especially about that particular scene when the inevitable victory of Bond over Pussy Galore is that you really know from the very beginning that this will happen, you know, that he will be victorious. But the camera is on them as long as they're fighting physically. She's resisting him because of her lesbian preoccupation and predisposition. But as soon as it seems that she gives in, the camera leaves, almost as though this part of the lovemaking is not the same as the previous fight. The fight was more important. But I think perhaps the best example, Russ, in the whole film of this kind of motif, which borders on latent homosexuality more than anything, and I'm for the first time willing to use the term in this connection, is the scene of the bombing of Fort Knox, or rather the gassing of Fort Knox.
Mm-hmm.
Pussy Galore has a group of about five or six pilots, all of whom we assume share her preference for females.
It's strange that they would make her a pilot, too, you know, because we tend to think of pilots as very masculine figures in our society.
Follows, very masculine figure, a confusion of the sexes. And she flies over Fort Knox with her girls, and if you know the plot, it's in order to kill by gas all of the soldiers who are guarding the fort. Now, what we don't know when we see this scene is that the gas has been replaced by a harmless gas and that the soldiers act out the role of dying. But we don't know this when we first see it, so this is the main thing, what we are experiencing. And what we do experience is a scene. I suppose in some stretch of the imagination you could make a scene funny out of this. But this is not an effort to be funny. See, this is not a spoof. This scene is not a spoof. This is a sadistic experience that the audience is invited to share in. So that's another example, I think, of the anti-heterosexual feeling in the film.
Well, are you saying then that most of the gals, or many of the gals in the James Bond movies, really enjoy hurting men, and that they're incapable of loving men?
Again, let me emphasize that rather than focus on the characters in the film, I would focus on the experience that the director invites us to have, you know? So that a couple of times, there are girls who seem genuinely interested in Bond, but this is not the main focus of the film. You know, this is not the genuine experience that the director invites us to have. What he really wants us to experience is sadistic treatment of girls, you see?
Well, now, let's take it from Bond's point of view. How does he view most of... How does the movies treat most of his relationships with women?
Most of Bond's experiences with women... He never mistreats them, by the way, because the public wouldn't stand for that. I mean, the mistreatment must... The public must have its cake and eat it too, you see. The mistreatment must not be by the hero. We must see the hero apparently loving women and getting all that he wants from them, and yet at the same time we get the cake and eat it too, and we see them also suffering, not at his hand, however, you see. His attitude toward women, to answer your question, is one of indifference, sort of a playboy attitude, if I might...
Well, we're going to be talking about the playboy routine I love tomorrow night.
This is the motif, this using the female as an object of manipulation that, like a disposable bag that can be used once and discarded and thrown away. This kind of thing is the way Bond is permitted to experience his relationship.
Well, is he having real love then?
Well,
is he experiencing real love?
I think the whole point here of the film is that he does not have this. This is something that's secondary to him, incidental to him, and not really of a major concern, a major importance.
Well, now we're saying something about American society.
Well, yeah, this is my major concern with this film. It's the reason that I have written about it and have been concerned about it. Again, as my friends have raised the question, did you enjoy it? I say, in one sense, yes, because it's a well-made film, and I, too, have these hostility feelings toward females, but I hope that I recognize them and know what's going on. What bothers me and what it does say about the American culture is that there can be such a great appreciation for this film, for Goldfinger, and to a lesser degree for the earlier one, and I fear for Thunderball when it comes out in December. And yet we don't know what it is we are appreciating. It's the lack of awareness of the dynamic that the American male is experiencing. He thinks he's experiencing great masculinity. He is actually experiencing anti-heterosexual behavior, latent homosexual, if you want to use that term.
Well, now, are we really saying that American men are incapable of loving in the true sense of the word?
Now, we don't want to generalize quite that much, but we could say that given the fact that in each of us there are these poles of love versus hate, and of death versus life, there seems to be a strong predisposition toward the negative, the hate, the death, and the cruelty side, as evidence in our appreciation for this film.
Well, now, why is this?
Well, you would be hard-pushed to make a general statement, but just as a beginning, I'd say that the absence of love that we find in much of our society, why do we have the absence? Again, general statement, that the whole dehumanizing process that we're undergoing right now, the technological revolution, for all that it has given us, at the same time has dehumanized us. It has made us less human, less person, having a less personhood. And without a personhood, you see, we have nothing with which to love. And I think in addition to this dehumanizing process that causes us to have no feelings of love or lesser feelings of love, there is a general fear, you know? You know, Russ, when there's a fear in the atmosphere, there's an inability to love, because in order to love, you've got to have courage, you've got to have the ability to commit yourself. yourself to a person of the opposite sex, you've got to have the willingness to be open to another, the willingness to have, the willingness to commit yourself to another in tenderness and in openness and risk. But we have in this country such a fear of the unknown. You know, I don't mean grandiose scales like the bomb and so forth, but I think it's more personal than that. It's the fear of the unknown. It's the fear of change. You know, we're in the midst of so many different revolutions right now, sexual revolution, racial revolution, technological revolution. And all of them will give us something different in the future, but we don't know what it is. And so we're afraid of it, you know. And
well, do you think this is why we have the preoccupation of James Bond with gizmos, you know, gadgets?
Yeah, this is the first thing I mentioned about the film, is this, you know, in the Goldfinger film, gadgets, electronic materials, are used against him, and he uses them against others. I mean, there's something a preoccupation in the country with gadgets.
Well, now, gadgets aren't human, and they can't respond to love, can they?
Can't respond to love. No, they can't.
I don't think they can.
No, they can't. So, you know,
and so it's sort of safe to fall in love with a gadget,
yeah,
then, isn't it?
If you've ever seen a man on Sunday afternoon polishing his car, you will see a man who loves a gadget more than he loves his wife.
Right.
Who's sitting on the front porch. If he would polish her to the same way in which he polishes that car...
Well, we seem to have lost Mr. Wall. And
yeah.
Oh, here you are.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Did I fade out on you there?
Yes, we just had some difficulty there for a moment, but you're back on.
Well, I was suggesting, I don't know how much of this you heard, I was suggesting that, you know, the man who polishes his car on Sunday...
Right.
...needs to polish his wife a bit more to call less.
Well, but we're really saying that it's safer to love things than it is to love people.
Right, that's a good way of putting it, safer, because in loving things, you don't get a response. You only get that which is a given quality. A human being, you have to get a response from. You can't predict, you know, what's going to happen. An automobile, you know, it's fairly predictable. You fill it up with gas, and it'll do pretty much what you want it to.
Well, a lot of writers are commenting on the fact that we lead very empty lives in America today. Do you think this is part of the reason?
Empty?
Yes.
I think a life without love is a very empty life. And I think we are experiencing right now, again, recognizing this is a generalization, an absence of the ability to love. And so this does mean we have empty existence.
Well, now the movie and the movie versions of James Bond tend to take up time, and frankly, I enjoyed the movies. I thought they were well done, and I thought they were entertaining, and they took me out of the real world, as it were, for an hour or two. Maybe I'm saying that this is why Americans love movies.
Well, some movies, and of course, yes, they took you out, Goldfinger took you out of the world for a while. It put you into a fantasy world.
But it's an awful safe world, too.
Well, but it put you into a fantasy world. It's safe, predictable. You knew the thing would come out the way it came out. You knew he would win. But whenever you are entertained, as you are in this film, taken out of the real world into a fantasy world, then you have to raise the question, what do I go back into the real world with? What have I picked up in my visit into fantasy land? How much of a human being am I now, as opposed to the kind of human being I was before I went into the film? Has the film, or has this entertainment I've just experienced, given me back part of my humanity, or has it taken it away? And I submit that the James Bond films, granted they are fantasy, and granted you get to be entertained, they take away a bit of your humanity.
Our guest tonight, Mr. James M. Wall. Our topic, Why Do We Like James Bond? You're tuned to the Night Call Network. This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Look, I'm quite self-sufficient. I made myself what I am, thank you.
But don't you think all of us occasionally could use a little divine or...
gee, I gotta run. Here's my card, anyhow. I'm a vice president now.
Well, good.
Yes, indeed.
But your name, it's just penciled in here.
Well, there's a big turnover in personnel. You know how it is.
Uh-huh. Well, that's just about how it is in life, isn't it?
Pardon?
We're all just penciled in.
Where'd you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him? It's a great life, but it would be greater why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
The preceding was presented by the United Presbyterian Church. This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
Our topic tonight on Night Call, why do we like the James Bond movies? And our guest is Mr. James M. Wall, and he's the editor of the Christian Advocate and also a movie critic. So if you'd like to comment on the James Bond movies or the novels, or ask Mr. Wall a question, give us a call here at Night Call. Now, here's how you do it. It's very simple. The number is area code 313-84-66601. Now, you may dial us direct, and if you wish, you may make the call collect. The number, area code, 313-84-66601. Now, the operators are on duty, and the lines are now open, so let's have your comment here on love and on James Bond. As you recall, our topic the whole week, this week, is love. So, let's see how James Bond fits into this scene. Mr. Wall, I now have a caller from Syracuse, New York, a listener on WBAL, Mr. James Ravencraft. Hello, James. Speak right up. You're on Night Call, sir.
Hello. There are two questions that I'd like to put to our guest this evening, and I'd like to try to put them so they won't be too leading, so it won't appear as I'm giving too much of an answer myself.
Okay.
It's obvious that I feel rather strongly about this. Two questions.
Right.
The first is, in relation to what Ms. Wall has been saying about the content of the James Bond movies, would it not appear then that the problem of regulating obscenity is somewhat more difficult than might be thought by the average person? In other words, the real complexity of the problems of love, for instance, make it so difficult for us to get accurate ideas as to what obscenity is, that to regulate something like this appears very difficult indeed.
Practically impossible in this sense.
Yes, and the other question would be somewhat related. Is it possible that this large amount of violence, which we tend to see in our mass entertainment media, might have something to do with the fact that we have experienced a rather large number and rather violent wars in the last few decades, and have this sort of thing hovering over it? In other words, the possibility of violence exists to such a degree that it's possible that we follow this up in our entertainment.
Mr. Wall, what do you think about that?
Well, good. These are two good questions. The first one, I would agree completely on the matter of censorship. I don't like censorship. I think the answer to bad movies is good criticism. And so I believe that we need to do things of this sort to criticize James Bond and point out that the usual way in which a censor operates is very usually ineffective, because he misses the real deeper dynamics of what's going on. Eliminating the birth of a buffalo in a Chicago theater, as they did once, and permitting such things as we have in Bond. So I agree with you that this points up the fact that censorship, as presently defined, is very ineffective, and as you say, almost impossible.
Well, now, what about this idea of violence?
Yeah, the second question is, I think it's possible, of course. Man is half violence, half love. There's no question about this. Violence is a part of our nature. The issue is how much of it can we control, how much of it can we legitimately channel. And I think it is true that we have numb to it, and that is, in one sense, though this has always been characteristic of man, it's characteristic of violence. I wouldn't want to, in other words, say that it's more true now than it was 50 years ago.
But I'm wondering if this makes us like violence, or is that just because
well,
it's part
yes,
of our nature?
There is part of our nature that does like violence, that recognizes the sheer pleasure in creating suffering and hostility. This is true. It just depends on how healthy we are as to how much of this we like. I mean, I think Eric Fromm has said that the absolute man on the far side of this spectrum is a man who loves death so much that he starts a war like Hitler. And yet, of course, he's insane. That's how extreme he is. All of us are on this spectrum to some degree or another. We all like violence to some degree.
And would you say that James Bond, then, is sort of over 50% on the violence routine?
I would say the Bond films appeal to our violence about 95%, yes. Triggers that in us, which is oriented to violence. And the dangerous part of Bond is that we don't know it.
See, we don't realize that this is
the... We're getting it and don't know we're getting it. And that's the most dangerous kind of poison to have in your soup.
Jim?
Yes?
Do you have any other comments?
Well, I was interested in the mention of Eric Fromm, an author whom I've read a little bit of, I think quite a bit of. I was wondering if I could ask Mr. Wallace if he might express some opinions on how we might amplify some of the love that's present in us and sort of get it into the mainstream of our society.
Oh, that's a big order.
Boy, yeah.
To get it in the mainstream. I guess that would be almost too big an order to try to give a prescription other than to say that we must recognize where love exists and where death exists. And to the recognition is half the battle. And then to celebrate it when it exists, that is love, enhance it, do what we can to add to it, and to recognize where death exists, do what we can to negate it.
Jim, I want to thank you for calling Night Call.
And thank you.
Thank you for your comments, Mr. James Ravencraft from Syracuse, New York, a listener on WBAL. And we have another listener from WBAL standing by, Mr. Walter Ford. Good evening, Walter. Your comment, sir.
How do you do?
Yes, sir.
I have a several questions to pose to Mr. Walsh.
Okay. Could you speak up, Walter, please?
Program driving home tonight.
Yes, sir.
In the first part, isn't Mr. Walsh's criticism of James Bond a little overblown? I say this in respect that hasn't Western man always had ideal heroes in literature and in sagas and legends like Agamemnon and Achilles, Hercules,
Superman,
and Siegfried and Tristan and Isolde and the Germanic line and so and so on like Beowulf and Roland and other Western lines. And isn't James Bond really a last refuge, I think, of the ideal of knight in shining armor of Western man? What would Mr. Ross comment be on that? I thought the...
I think I understand what you're saying, that we've always had the heroes, but I'm not sure that we've had a hero who invited us to share in the death of women as extensively as Bond does. This is my objection. That's my objection to him, that sure, he's a hero, but he's more of an anti-hero than he is a hero. He's a negation of all that we would like to be as true men.
Do you believe that he's really that different than any other heroes?
Mind you, I believe the film is different. I think when you're seeing a film, you really have to operate on the total experience that you take rather than just the character. I want to make that careful distinction, because Bond is presented to us as a masculine figure, but the total impact, the cinematic experience that we have, you see, is one of quite a different kind of reaction.
Well, isn't Siegfried and Tristan presented to us as a masculine figure?
Yeah, but not in the same sense accompanied by cruelty and death to women.
See? Well, how about in the story that's been recently on Broadway, Broadway show Camelot, how about the part that Robert Goulet played is, I can't think of the... Sir Galahad, did he play Galahad or...
I'm not sure.
I'm not sure either. I'm sure some of our listeners will be able to tell us.
Yeah. Well, again, I would emphasize that it is not... the character Bond standing alone gives the impression of being the true hero because he never himself kills the women. He treats them rather poorly, but he never kills them or makes them suffer. What I'm driving at is the total cinematic experience that we have from seeing the film. See, we're dealing with a totally new kind of medium here when we're talking about a motion picture, something we haven't had before until this century.
Well, does he change his role in the film and in the novels?
I've not enough an authority on the novels. I've read some of them. Are you asking me this?
Yes, right.
I've read some of the novels. There's a difference, but there is this potential. The novel is a much better spoof than the film. I enjoy the novels more than films because you've got in the novels his ability to handle the right kinds of foods and wines, you know. I mean, here's the...
Don't all films usually handle novels badly?
Do what?
Don't all films usually handle novels badly? Or literature badly?
Oh, I wouldn't want to say that. I'm too much of a lover of motion pictures to say that. Some of them, badly, yes, but others make a novel that mediocre look very good.
All right, the second question I would like to pose to you is
could you speak up, Walter, please?
I beg your pardon?
Could you speak up, please?
Yeah, sure. The second question I would like to pose to Mr. Wall is doesn't he think that, in relation to the first question, doesn't he think that James Bond is really a sort of a last refuge of the Anglo-Saxon tradition and the tradition, if you would have it, of Western man in having a mythological hero, a knight, so to speak?
In a last refuge, that there are no other refuges, other places to go, you mean?
Well, what other personality would you term as a comparison to Beowulf or Roland or Siegfried?
Oh, you think...
Who would you have the Anglo-Saxon man today look up to, mythologically or factually?
I see.
As a comparison?
He's certainly not to me the last refuge. If he were the last refuge, I think we'd be on our last legs. This would be my point.
Well, who is your ideal in modern society, either historically or living person, as an ideal of the traditional knight
Well, fiction is strangely lacking in this figure. I agree with you. You don't have very many people. You know, the interesting thing about this, I think now.
Well, don't you think this tremendous appeal, this popularity that James Bond has, is related to this idea?
That there is an absence of these figures?
Yes.
Perhaps so, though I think this deeper thing is involved. I was going to say that I find in certain politicians, if I might, a certain...
I think that people find an absence of this in their politicians.
Well, I take John Kennedy, for example. I think here is a man that... captured the imagination of the country because he was able to have a certain style and grace in the face of absolute ambiguity. And this is the kind of hero that I see emerging in modern times. You don't find this in very many fictional characters. More of the fictional characters are indications of weak and inadequate men. But on the political scene, where real power decisions are made, we can see them emerging, and certainly Kennedy is the best example that comes to my mind.
Walter, time's up now, and I want to thank you for calling Night Call.
Well, I want to thank you for receiving my call.
And we've enjoyed your comments. Very interesting comments indeed. Mr. Walter Ford from Baltimore, Maryland, listener on WBAL.
Our guest tonight is Mr. James M. Ball. I beg your pardon, Mr. Wall. And our topic, Why Do We Like James Bond? You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Busy America!
hobby. Busy buying gadgets. Busy keeping up with you know who.
Is that your idea of fulfillment? Don't you wonder if there's more to life than just that rat race with no finish line? Where'd you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him? It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
The preceding was presented by the United Presbyterian Church.
This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
Hello again, Night People. Our guest tonight, Mr. James M. Wall. And Jim is an editor of the Christian Advocate, and also a pretty knowledgeable movie critic. And our topic tonight, why do we like James Bond? And specifically, why do we like the James Bond movies? And if you'd like to get in and express your opinion on why you like the movies or you don't like the James Bond movies, give us a call here at Night Call. Now, it's very simple to call us. All you have to do is pick up that old phone. Oh, I see you have a new phone. All right, you pick up the new phone, and it's area code 313-84-6661. Now, remember, you may call from anywhere collect. Please make the call station to station. The number is area code 313-84-6661. The operators are on duty, and the lines are open. So let's hear from you on Night Call. And, Mr. Wall, we have a caller now from New Jersey, a listener on WBAL, Mr. Gary Garabedian. Hello, Gary. Speak right up. You're on Night Call, sir.
Hi.
Yes, sir.
I've been very interested in the comments I've heard tonight. I thought I might add why I think we like James Bond.
Okay.
Well, personally, I feel that Ian Fleming has taken a rather surefire general formula, Mickey Spillane's Mike Hammer type of formula, mixed it perhaps with a bit of Jack the Giant Killer, giving it an awful lot of fine erudition and inside information, creating the superhero and the super problem, and giving us, I think, a rather wonderful kind of escape literature. Now, I'm speaking about the books. I saw the movies, and frankly, I saw no resemblance.
Oh, between the books and the movies?
That's right. I think they were so dissimilar as to be completely disappointing to me.
Where did they go astray?
In interpretation. I think the purpose of the James Bond story was pretty much that of the, let's say, the fairy tale.
Mm-hmm.
And, for adults on an adult level. And I think that that they introduced rather superfluous tedium and gimmickry. And I think the direction, by and large, was rather poor. I think, let's say, if Vincente Minnelli had directed this, I think maybe we could have done it to music, you know, and had a little more out of it.
Right.
With dances, and we could have had fun going along the way they were going, because they lost the suspense, they lost the stress, they lost the urgency. They lost so many things, and they played up the current preoccupation with the eccentricities of sexual behavior, I think, on the scene today. I think they're catering more to what they think the public wants to see rather than what Ian Fleming had in mind when he wrote.
Jim, do you want to comment on Gary's comments?
I think that's a good defense of Fleming, and I would agree with it to a certain extent. That's why I'm focusing.
Gary, in the novels, did you find that James Bond comes off as sort of a heterosexual type image? That his image as a heterosexual man is rather impaired here?
In the novel?
Yes.
Frankly, no. I read the novel as a... in broad terms, I'd say no. Now, I didn't cite the character deeply. I don't know that I felt it warranted it, but in broad terms, I think that James Bond was rather interested, generally speaking, in the women, the desirable women he came in contact with, and unless Don Juanism indicates latent homosexuality, as some people may claim, I think he was rather normal.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, I would say that this tendency, which I assume to be in the novel, of flitting from one female to the other, does indicate a certain latent homosexuality, an uncertainty about one's masculinity. Hence, Don Juanism is most certainly this. But Russ, I think this is a good defense of Fleming's novels, and I think that's well put.
Gary, I want to thank you for your comments.
Well, you're entirely welcome. It's a pleasure to call you from this distance, and to know that you're within easy reach by phone.
Right, any time on Night Call. And we're going to be dealing with love all week, and I think tomorrow you'll find the show rather interesting. We have Dr. Alan Moore out of California, and he's going to be talking about playboyism. Is this a new religion, religious alternative? And if you've been following the Playboy magazine, you'll find that there's some pretty interesting comments.
Didn't Life magazine use a different word describing that cult when they reviewed What's New, Pussycat?
I'm not sure. I didn't see that particular review. But this is the idea that we're dealing with all week, love. And by the way, Gary, how do you pronounce that town that you're from in New Jersey?
Pennsauken.
Pennsauken. Where about is that?
Oh, it's near Camden.
Near Camden. Gary, thanks again for calling Night Call. Good night, sir. Gentlemen from listening on WBAL. Jim, we've kicked a lot of ideas around tonight, and we've said quite a few things about James Bond. The thing that I'm wondering is, have we really said anything about this inability to love that these characters all manifest?
Perhaps we have focused more on the film itself and less on this other. We should say, I think, Russ, that what this film presents for us is a rather lengthy statement that in your fantasy life for the next 2 hours, we invite you to experience non-love or the absence of love.
This is all the violence in the movie.
Oh, yeah. To a certain extent, it's a violence. But more subtle than that, it's, again, this disdain he has of the way he handles his women and when he does encounter them. And this is where I would have to mention about the previous man's comment about the Don Juanism. This is unquestionably an anti-heterosexual experience, this inability to settle down with one. But the cinematic experience of Goldfinger is simply that of anti-love. I don't think we can even give the film the credit for having characters that are developed enough so that you care whether they love or not, you see.
Well, now, one thing I noticed in the motion pictures, I think it was particularly in Dr. No, that the fellows all felt better when they were with other fellows. They seemed more at ease when they were discussing things with one another. When he was with the little gal, as I recall in the little Oriental gal, we get the idea that he's having an affair with her, but he soon dispatches her and has her thrown in the hoosegow.
Yeah.
And the next thing we know, he's off with the boys again discussing the problems.
And what we really must ask ourselves is, why does this appeal so heavily to the American population? And without question, to the teenage population, especially. We really have to raise that question, and what we come up with, I think, is a conclusion that the absence of love is a dominant motif in the American culture, as opposed to the presence of this urge toward death, this urge toward anti-love.
Is there any reason why this is so manifest in our society that you can pinpoint?
The easiest way I could pinpoint it without recognizing that you cannot overstate, it's easy to overstate something like this, is to just simply describe the fact that we haven't yet learned to cope with the technological society we find ourselves in. I don't blame the society. I mean, every generation must learn to live in the context in which it finds itself. And the technological advancements that we have inherited are giving us many good things, but we haven't yet learned to live with them. We're still afraid of what they give to us, and so we have tended to shrivel up inside and get away from this willingness to commit ourselves, to reach out, to have responsible relationships with others. This is one way of pinpointing it.
We don't seem to be able to communicate our feelings to one another.
Yeah, when you shrivel up, you know, when you withdraw from human relationships, as one of the psychologists says, when you retreat into playing games, you know, you play the automobile game when you go out with the fellows and you talk about your car against my car and how fast it'll go and what's the price of the cars this year. You play the sports game. You get involved in things outside of yourself so that you don't have to really communicate who you are as a person. This is, again, this manifestation of a retreat from relating genuinely to other people.
It's a surface, then, cover-up.
Yeah, the game playing is a way of avoiding this. Discussing, talking about, projecting yourself into other experiences, but not really letting yourself come across to another person.
One more question. Do you think that the average person who views the James Bond movies realizes some of the things that are happening to him at this time?
I doubt it, and that's one reason I'm so evangelical on this subject. I doubt it. I doubt that they do. I think it's too subtle. I hope that people who heard us tonight will not be able to see Thunderball without at least raising this question in their mind.
Mr. Wall, I want to thank you for being our guest on Night Call. We've enjoyed having you.
Thank you. It's good to be with you, Russ.
Our guest tonight, Mr. James M. Wall, and he is the editor of The Christian Advocate and a movie critic. Our topic was, Why Do We Like James Bond? Tomorrow night, we continue our look at love on Night Call, and our guest is Dr. Alan Moore. Our topic, Playboy, a new religious alternative. Until then, this is Gibb wishing you good luck and Godspeed.
Night Call is produced by the Methodist Church in cooperation with the National Council of Churches and this radio station. As a radio forum dedicated to the frank discussion of vital issues of daily life. Night Call encourages its participants to express freely and responsibly their own personal opinions.